Welcome to the final Hot Lava podcast of the Padres 2020 season. What a season it has been. My name is Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer. I am still in Texas. Made some hastily arranged travel plans to get back home. The sudden ending to a season, which is how it is when you're in the playoffs. My boss, Jay Posner, a sports editor of the Union Tribune. Jay, I would argue that this was actually a pretty good run into the postseason for a team that lost its top two starters the week the final week of the regular season. We could talk about the offense, some defensive breakdowns, but quite honestly, that they won a series and got here without Dinelson Lamet and Mike Clevinger, I don't know. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the season, you could start with just the season in general. I mean, I think if you had told everyone one of those things, you tell everybody at the start of the season, the Padres are going to go 37-23 and they're going to win a playoff series and they're going to get to play the Dodgers in the second round after 9 straight seasons of losing and 13, 14 seasons without being in the playoffs, I think pretty much everyone would have signed up for that. Of course, nobody likes, in Padre world, nobody likes the sweep and ending the season with a sweep. But it was, I don't want to say almost destined to happen, but when you don't have Clevinger and you don't have Lamet and, Cody Bellinger turns into Superman at the wall, then that's what happens. And look, there's no guarantee the Padres are going to win game two, even if he doesn't make that catch. But that was it was a huge play. And the Padres still had a chance, of course, in the ninth inning to tie the game or win the game. But it did feel like once that game ended and the Padres were lining up, yet another bullpen game last night, it just felt like this was kind of about to be the end for things. But I think, as you mentioned, in the big picture, to make a run like this and to win a playoff series and the way they won it against the Cardinals, with a comeback and then making history with that 9-pitcher shutout in game 3 on Friday, I think, and just the way they played all year, I mean, the excitement and the fun and that they showed, I think most Padre fans, I would hope, would be quite pleased with the way that the season went on the field. Obviously not being able to go to the games is another story.
I would think thrilled. And because I am enjoying this new way that we hold the Padres to a higher standard, you would have liked to have seen them put up a better fight. But the fact is, a 5-game series against the Dodgers without Dinelson Lamet and Mike Clevinger was going to be difficult. And you got one inning from Mike Clevinger. And we'll talk about that and maybe what might happen in the future. But look, that bullpen that had a 1.5 ERA the first series against the Cardinals was almost a 9 ERA. They were gassed. Moreover, the Dodgers are an incredible team. They just have hitters, and they're just gonna, they're gonna break you down at some point. And then what happens is then they pile on you.
And it's interesting because when you look at some of their individual stats this year, some of these guys have not been great, have not lived up to their standards that they set in the past. But they have so many guys that when 3 or 4 of them aren't playing well, there's still 3 or 4 that are. And it starts with Mookie Betts, who's clearly one of the top, I don't know where you put him, but 2, 3, 4 best players in baseball right now. Unfortunately for the Padres, they're going to be looking at him for a long time. What you would hope is that the Dodgers are thinking, okay, well, we're going to have to look at Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado for a long time as well. And maybe, Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino or whoever some of the prospects are, if they come up, and we can get into that a little bit later. But the Dodgers just have so many weapons that they can roll out there. And even when their closer is terrible, like Kenley Jansen was, they've still got guys, Gratterall, Trinan, Pedro Baez, these guys they can just keep putting out there. And it's tough to beat them. And I'm just as an aside, I'm really interested to watch them play against the Braves. I mean, the Braves pitched 4 shutouts in 5 games against the Reds and the Marlins. And I can't wait to see how those teams match up next week. So But yeah, I think we should start with the pitching and Clevinger and Lamet. And I don't know. I mean, what I'm wondering is, are these long-term issues and how much can the Padres count on them? I mean, it was a huge disappointment that we didn't get to see them in the playoffs and to see what they would have done against the Dodgers this week. But now I'm wondering, what does this mean for the future? I mean, both guys have had Tommy John surgery, and what do you think about where we're headed with these two guys, especially Lamet, who seemed to be obviously the more seriously injured?
Right. And that's the one that there's less transparency about. I don't know what the word is, but there's some mystery there that does make me go, okay, well, makes me first as a journalist go, I got to find out what's going on here. And, you know, there's some worry about that one. So now Mike Clevinger, it's in the back of the elbow. It doesn't have, a lot of people telling me it doesn't have to do with the UCL. Some people saying that the best thing and basically the only thing is arthroscopic surgery, which is not a big deal. You know, clean up something in the elbow there, and, you know, getting conflicting things there. And I don't know, sometimes as I've reported on these injuries, I just think some people don't really know, you know, you got the doctors, you got the people in the front office, you got the players, the people around the players. You try to piece it all together. And there's, I don't think that it's long-term with Mike Clevinger. Now, Mike Clevinger's had some health issues. The Padres have had issues when they've traded for players they thought were going to change around their franchise. So I understand that there would be a little bit of concern here, but the fact is that, you're going to expect that you're going to put those guys atop your rotation next year too. And that's the story that I'm working on now. They made these moves for this year, but they were right from the start, AJ Preller, but these were also for the future. And that's what the Padres were already talking about last night. And I thought that was interesting. They were devastated, but of course they had a few innings to realize they were going to lose and you know, have their post-game speeches ready. But they were already talking about it in the clubhouse among themselves that, look, pretty much everybody's coming back if the team decides that that's what they're going to do. And with AJ Preller, you never know. But I think that things are okay.
I think a couple things to touch on in the series itself that I saw people make points online and you know, I think there's a lot of points that get made online. I don't think most of them usually hold up very well, but there were a couple that I did want to ask about. And I thought one of them was back in the first game, and I would give credit to these people if I remembered who was talking about it, but mentioned that when Tingler went to Strom, I believe it was in the sixth inning of that game. That was a very high leverage situation, and I wonder. And look, in retrospect, Drew Pomeranz did not pitch well in the series, but I wonder if that was a time where they could have gone to Pomeranz instead of Strom. And then last night, I didn't wonder why Morihone didn't go more than a couple innings, because he hasn't done that all year. And you know, they sent him out there after the 41 pitches in the first two innings. He hadn't thrown more than 41 all year. He walks Betts on five pitches. Seager hits a bullet on the next thing. Now he's up to, what was it, 49 or 50 pitches. I think it was 49. And to me, that was it. I mean, I didn't see any issue at that point. And look, Craig Stammen had his good outings. He had his bad outings. His last one was really good. He was a hero after game three of the Cardinals series. You know, last night didn't work out quite as well for him. But I did wonder a little bit later in the game, and I did tweet about this. They kind of leaked a couple runs after it got to 6-2, went to 7-2, then it went to 8-2. And I kind of thought at that point, and I remember Dave Roberts doing this with Kenley Jansen, might have been last year or the year before, where he brought Jansen in, pitched like three innings sort of thing. And I wondered why not go to Pagan and Pomeranz and Rosenthal earlier last night. Would it have made a difference? I don't know. But it just seemed like maybe a little more sense of urgency there. And I didn't know if you had any of those thoughts or not.
Maybe I was already to the point where their bullpen is beat up.
Right.
While they were going to have to push guys, it was what then? Maybe. And so, no, during the game last night, I did not, Jay. I was thinking, I think these guys have one inning in them and there's seven innings left. What are they going to do? Those are all valid. I mean, they really are. And
Garrett Richards was another guy that could have been used maybe earlier in the game. But I don't know what the situation is with Richards, because he didn't pitch more than like an inning at a time during
this. I wish that people could understand how many times this year it was frustrating for me to not have the usual access and to have trouble getting in touch with people just because of the way that things are. One thing I always try to keep in mind is they know the health of their players. They know what those guys are throwing like. Now, I'm not saying that they're infallible and that none of these questions aren't valid. They are, but they kept referring to guys being banged up. And I think we could see that a whole bunch of pitchers were tired.
Right.
And so to some extent, I just wonder if we're over analyzing it in terms of, first off, they were facing the Dodgers. And if you get to the seventh or the eighth or the ninth, you know, inning, that's where the Dodgers kill you anyway. Again, all valid questions. In the end, and I'm having fun talking about it, and it was a great season. I just feel like in the end, they were going to beat the Dodgers with this team.
They weren't going to beat the Dodgers. Yeah.
Not in five games. Not in 5 games. Could they have pushed it to four? Could they have pushed it to five? Gosh, Chris Paddock could go out there today. And I mean, all that stuff, but they weren't going to beat the Dodgers in 5 games.
No, I don't think so either. Like I said, it just struck me during that game. It's kind of like you're throwing out guys like Austin Adams and people that normally, and Patino, and people that have normally pitched in games where, you know, the leverage is quite a bit lower. And I just felt like you could have, at that point, maybe you try to, shut down the Dodgers with your best guys, try to get something going offensively. And who knows, if it gets down to the seventh inning and somehow you have a one-run lead, figure it out. I mean, maybe one of these guys then, but
it's not all year.
Yeah, it's not a huge. I don't think it's a big deal. I just wanted to address that and certainly address the Morihone issue. And I am curious going forward, as we continue to talk about pitching. Let's say you have Clevinger and Lamet, and they're both healthy, and I don't know what to make of Chris Paddock at this point. I don't think anybody does. I think it's way too early to give up on a guy who I think has pitched in 38 or 39 major league games, which is barely more than a full season for a starter. So now let's say you've got those three guys. I don't know what the plans are for Richards, you know, going forward, but you've got Gore, you've got Patino. Are those guys ready to jump into the rotation right away? I mean, this was kind of a lost season, it seemed like, especially for Gore. We have no idea how many innings he pitched at the alternate site. I know he was, you know, I'm sure he threw a lot, but is it the same as facing different hitters in double A, you know, every night? I mean, I don't know if he's a guy that you can count on being in the rotation right at the start next year. Patino a little different because he was up here longer. And I think Morihone is an interesting guy. I mean, is he a guy that's always going to be a two or three inning guy, or is he somebody that you can count on? And I guess Baez is sort of in that position as well. Can you count on either of these guys being six inning pitchers, which is really all most starters are now anyway? And I also left out Zach Davies, who is another guy that, you know, pitched very well most of the year. So there's a lot of options there, but what do you think about Morihone and a little bit about Baez and also Gore and Patino and where all this fits in? We're talking almost 5 or 6 months from now, but hey, what else we got to do?
Hey, I do think it's a big offseason for Chris Paddock. Whatever this mechanical adjustment that people are talking about is, needs to be made. And is there some mental stuff too? Is there the development of the cutter, you know, as his third pitch or fourth pitch, whatever it is? Sure, this is a big offseason for Chris Paddock. A lost season for Mackenzie Gore. It seems like there's a lot of things that could have been worked out in games at AAA, or maybe, you know, he was back at AA, I you know, depending on how the season went. For sure. Adrian Morihone, by all accounts, is a future starter, or at least that's the track that they plan to put him on, and they have very high hopes for him. Obviously, the same for Luis Patino. I would think those guys at this point are far ahead of Mackenzie Gore. Now, if Mackenzie Gore has the talent and the, you know, the mentality that everyone says he does, then he can make that up and make up for this lost season. Everything you brought up there about these pitchers is a part of kind of the aftermath, the residue of this weird 2020 season, because while everyone, the alternate site, no, they got great work and they were around major leaguers, all baseball people say this was not good.
Right.
You didn't get any, you didn't get pitching in games. You didn't get every 5 days that buildup. You didn't get the travel and the fans. This was without a doubt a lost season. Now, all 30 teams had that. So then none of them were able to send their players somewhere and play a season. So they all had that, but that's something that you'll be watching, because otherwise we'd be saying, well, who knows what would have happened. Maybe Mackenzie Gore would have been up here already, but you'd be saying, okay, all these guys are on a progression. What was their progression now? Well, how are we going to refer to it in the future? He advanced from high A to the alternate site to the major. So that's what was so impressive about Ryan Weathers. For goodness sake, he was in low A ball.
Yeah.
Then all he did was the alternate site. He had such a good spring training that obviously none of us knew about. He wasn't on the major league field. Had a really good summer camp that we did know about, but okay, fine, whatever. He was in high school 2 years ago. And bam. Came up. And so that's interesting. Look, it was one appearance. Going to be in the majors next year. I'm saying that was really impressive. And okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see Weathers being as a candidate for the rotation at the start of the year next year. It's kind of hard to see Gore.
He gets a spring training invite is what he gets.
Right. It's kind of hard to see Gore in that position, but you're still talking about, the four guys that they ended the season with, if they're healthy. Plus Morahone, plus Patino. We mentioned Gore, we mentioned Weathers. I mean, that's several guys going forward, and I'm sure there's a couple that I've even left out. And you're going to need candidates. I mean, as we've seen, that you can never have enough starting pitchers, because the Padres certainly did not have enough, to get through even this, 66 game season that they ended up playing. They had to go to bullpen games. Way more than I think is ideal, and way more than I think they wanted to. I mean, I'm sure they would like nothing more than to have five solid starters and roll them out there every 5 days, and they all go six or seven innings. But they were not in that position this year, and I think that's, to me, that's sort of the biggest thing to look at going forward into next year, because I do think that the lineup is mostly set. I mean, if you look at it, if you've got Pham and Grisham and Myers all coming back, they're all under contract for next year. The infielders are all under contract, for next year. Nobody's going anywhere. Cronenworth was a huge surprise. You've still got Profar. You've still got a cheap option on Mitch Moreland as a, bench. I don't know what's going to happen with the DH, but a bench DH option. I mean, he certainly showed later that he, sort of the signs of what he can be against right-handed pitching. So, catching, I don't know where you stand. I mean, I think Austin Nola, I think you can count. Austin Nola is your starter going forward. I don't know where Camposano is. That's another guy that, did he really get enough development this year? Or is he going to be better off, sort of starting in the minors next year? And I don't know where Mejia is either. So
who knows where Mejia is? I don't know that the Padres even know where Mejia is. But I think they think very highly of Luis Camposano. You talk about a lost year, though. I think you'd be looking at that guy in the majors next year. I think you still are. But, it's probably as Austin Nola's backup. Or at least I should say that Camposano comes into spring training with a real shot to be on the roster next year. Turkson Profar is a free agent and owes it to himself to get the, to get the big bucks. He played really well. The Padres love this guy. I mean, I loved watching this guy, and you could see the effect he had on his teammates and the way that he played the final month and a half of the season. Certainly not in this series, but hey, that's what happens in the playoffs sometimes. So I think that's one of the fascinating things, but you're right about this lineup. It certainly seems pretty, and every time, and there were little periods, but this is what you're kind of trained to do when you see a rookie. Every time it looked like Jake Cronenworth was tired or that they'd figured him out, the guy knows how to hit. He's got a really good swing that I just don't know that Jake Cronenworth is going to run into a situation where he's exposed for very long. I think he's a really good player. So I think that middle of that infield set, which then you start talking about, well, what does that mean to, if Grisham's going to be here, what does that mean to some of their up the middle prospects that, you're like, oh, it's cool. You can just move CJ Abrams to center field. Well, really? Can you? Well, yeah, maybe you can, because Will Myers is not going to be here more than 1 year. Right. Am I losing my math?
And Abrams isn't a guy that's ready right away either.
But,
you've got time with a couple of those guys. So I do think that Profar will be interesting, because I wonder what sort of market there is for
him.
What's
the market?
Right. And what sort of, and where do the Padres sort of value him in terms of that market. And because he provides, even if he's not a regular starter, because if Pham is healthy, it's likely going to be Pham and it's likely going to be Cronenworth. But you're going to need a guy like that that can go back, can go to those different positions. And if there is a DH again, that can slot in there as well. So Profar definitely a valuable piece going forward. And it doesn't mean that if they lose him, that can't find somebody else or that there's not anybody else out there. But that is one to keep an eye on going
forward. It is. I want to say this, and I forget who it was, but somebody signed a deal at the beginning of the postseason, or it was the end of the regular season. And it was a deal that wasn't that great, but it was a long-term deal. And I wish I could remember it. I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were going to get into talking about this today, but you brought up something about what will the market be for Jurickson and Profar. We could be in for another ugly offseason, man. Owners lost money. That's what they're saying. Players are due their full salaries in 2021.
Right.
Fans may not be allowed back in the ballparks at all or to a great extent at the start of or maybe throughout 2021, depending on where we're at. None of us can predict that anymore. They are bracing for there to be some sort of battle. And at the very least, and this is why I brought up that contract, it was heralded, even though it wasn't a great contract, as a great contract because it got it out of the way. And, no one knows what this market is going to be for guys like Jurickson and Profar. This right. is going to be, I'd like to say fascinating, but I'm just sort of irritated that we're going to be going through this again this offseason. But that will be very interesting because I think Jurickson and Profar truly does love it here. But remember, this was the former number one prospect who at some point he expected he was going to be making the big bucks by now. Sure. If he got himself into a deal where some other team wants to come and give him a multi-year deal that helps him and his family, Padres probably aren't in a position for a fourth outfielder, fifth infielder to be matching that. But I know they'd love to have him back.
Right. And as we said, no idea what the market is, and it may turn out that you can get him for a two-year deal for, very reasonable money. Yes. And he comes back and is valuable going forward. And how about the bullpen? Rosenthal's a free agent. Kirby Yates is a free agent.
And it's been posed to me as one or the other. And guys, it might be neither. Trevor Rosenthal fit in wonderfully. Obviously, on the field, look, he gave up a lot of contact. He's sort of effectively wild, which, that's the way it is sometimes. But I don't know that Trevor Rosenthal is somebody that is in their long-term plans. That's not something that I've heard or that I heard was decided. Look, if they were going to keep Kirby Yates, they probably would have done it before this year. Mm-hmm. And now, again, maybe market has something to do with that. So sure. I would think, though, that there will be a market for Kirby Yates. So we'll see there, but it might not be one or the other. It might be neither.
Well, it's a tough market for Yates. I mean, I feel bad for Yates, a guy who, had to be figuring he was going to cash, like you talked about Profar, was going to be cashing in with some big money, and he didn't do the deal, get a deal before this season, ends up with a prorated deal for this season. And now I do wonder what the market is for a guy coming off an injury that can't show, is he healthy, is he not? There's a real question there. And of course, if neither one of those guys is back, then who's your closer? Is it Drew Pomerantz? Is it Emilio Pagan?
Who looked really strong at the end of the season. And that's not me saying he should be the closer, but he looked really, he's the guy that you got over the final month when he came back from the biceps for the most part. Drew Pomerantz at times was dominating, probably at the end. A little bit tired, or maybe he just faced the Dodgers. By the time he came in some of those games, it was like 1 o'clock here. I'm trying to make the papers deadline. And, I look forward to going back and watching the end of this series.
Don't even bother. The Bellinger catch and the Hosmer ground out at the end in game two, I don't think you need to see a whole lot more after that.
Where is so Luis Patino probably moving, putting him on a track to come into spring training as a starter. Same with Adrian Morahone. Where is Jose Castillo? Again, really excited about Jose Castillo waiting for the next injury. At this point, I'm not saying that to be, dismissive. That's just the way it is. You can absolutely not count on Jose Castillo. yeah, they traded away Andres Munoz. The bullpen is it was strong. And once again, and this is how it is for, I guess, every bullpen except the Rays, who somehow just manufacture bullpens. Every year. Maybe that's where AJ will go. He'll trade again for another Rays reliever because they'll have too many. And they'll need one of his outfielders or something. The bullpen is, you know, be reconstructed perennially, basically, except that you do have, what a find, Pierce Johnson. What a find. Really? Yeah. You're talking about a sixth inning guy? Wow. That's your new Craig Stammen, who, by the way, you have for three more years. I should say this. You got him on a deal that was for, 3 years with an option. Craig Stammen will come back to spring training, and we'll see how 2021 goes.
Yeah, I mean, I know Stammen, I think I looked the other day because last night, someone wondered if that was Stammen's last outing with the Padres, and I think he's owed $4 million for next year and a $1 million buyout. So
right, that's it. I'm sorry, it's 2 years with an option, right?
Right. So it would be $5 million if he would get a $5 million parting gift if he's not here anymore. But yeah, Johnson.
Let's remember the guy still gets a lot of outs. So
yeah, where's Matt Strom? I'm assuming he's going to have some sort of knee procedure.
Some sort of knee scope. Yeah, probably.
He's another guy, and it seems like you can always, the bullpen's always being reconstructed, and I wouldn't worry too much about that. I do think, as you said, I think even if Rosenthal and Yates are both gone, Pagan is probably the favorite at this point to be the closer with Pomerantz, you know, back there as well, and maybe it's a mix and match situation to close games. And yes. Let's close with this. Everything else. This was still a 60-game season, and who knows how things would have held up and what kind of questions we would have had.
That's fair.
If this had gone for 6 months instead of 60 games. And, you know, we're basing a lot of things on what happened over these 60 games, and there's just no way to know what happened. I don't think that should take anything away from what the Padres accomplished. I do think this was especially with the trades that were made, I do think this was a team that would have made the postseason. And I don't think this was a team that was going to beat the Dodgers this year, regardless of health or anything else. It certainly would have been interesting to find out. We'll never know. But to go
now
back
I'll
to
where disagree with you there, that if Denelson Lament and Mike Clevinger had come in and thrown the games they're capable of and the Padres are up 2-0, then that's a whole different deal. But aside from that, they had no chance to beat them as things were constituted, or probably even if Clevinger was healthy, it would have been really rough the way that the pitching was going right now.
No, I mean, I just think anything can happen in five games, but if you're gonna pick a team in this series, even with Clevinger and Lamet, I think you're still picking the Dodgers. Padres would have had a much better chance, obviously.
There were times during this 60-game season, Jay, where I was like, you know, I don't even know what to make of this. Is this team really built for 162? And then, you know, based on what I saw and based on talking with people in the organization and other people is, you know, there's some other things. You know, maybe Tommy Pham would have come around and ended up having an 800 OPS.
Sure.
Maybe some of the relievers whose ERAs were high, the ebb and flow of a season, and they would have evened out. And like I said about Jake Cronenworth showing who he was, I don't think we have any question about what at this point, I don't even have questions about Will Myers. I mean, certainly there are still questions within the organization. But I think what I'm saying is he showed enough that he realized, he learned how to stay out of those slumps for an entire season. Okay. I'm not saying he's got a 940 OPS over the whole season, but I just really think they did show that and I think you said it, they were still a playoff caliber team this year over 162.
Yeah. I think I would absolutely agree with that. And not just cause I said it.
This is our longest hot lava. It's our last one for a while, I guess, but our longest hot lava of the year, Jay.
It was, Kevin. I enjoyed it as always. I hope the people out there enjoyed it. And we always look forward to getting any feedback and in any ways that we can improve it next year. And I'm sure we'll be back during the off season with more hot lava when moves are made, or who knows? I guess there's not going to be a winner Is there going to be a virtual winter meetings this year? I mean,
it's here. And my understanding is it will be conducted as of now, but probably not with media in attendance. And in a lot of the things, a lot of the features that make it this gigantic, it's not just MLB winter meetings, it's baseball winter meetings.
But anyway, follow us on Twitter and we'll keep you apprised of when we're going to be back. And again, thanks to everyone, and make sure you keep going to the website, subscribe to the paper, subscribe to the website, and we'll Kevin and Jeff and everyone else will have more outstanding coverage throughout the off season, and we'll look forward even more so than usual to next spring.
Thank you, everybody.